Thank you for traveling with Amex Platinum. To your right, you'll see Oceanside Relaxation at a fine hotel and resort property. When booked through Amex Travel, you can enjoy complimentary breakfast for 2 and 4 p.m. late checkout. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
This is John Middlecoff from 3 and Out with John Middlecoff. Superchargers, headlights, and more. With over 122 million parts, eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Stay on your A-game with all the parts you need at the prices you want. It's easy to bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Hey everyone, welcome into the Fantasy Pros Football Podcast. I'm Bobby Sylvester, back from vacation. And as always, I'm with Mike Taglier, and we got Kyle Yates as well today. Give us all a follow on Twitter if you don't already. We're at Bobby Fantasy Pro, at Mike Taglier NFL, and at Kyle Y NFL. Tags, what's going on, dude?
Oh, nothing much. A weekend in the books. Bobby, it's good to have you back. Unfortunately, yeah. The news that I have to share from the weekend is that I broke a transmission at the racetrack. So it could have been a better weekend, but fortunately, I'm okay. The car is okay. It just, I need to drop a trans.
I didn't know you were at the racetrack, dude. I saw you were going 115. And I was like, I won't tell the police, man, but you should probably not do that.
It was down a track, and I mean, okay. Yeah, it's okay.
Yates, what's up, man? Did you win the mock draft while I was gone? Like, okay, first of all, before you, yeah, baby, because I was really nervous. Because here's the thing. We had the mock draft planned for after I came back from vacation. And then Tags is like, hey, Bobby, you should probably take some time off before the football season starts. I thought he was being nice. And then all of a sudden I see on the schedule that the mock draft has been moved up. And I know what you were doing, Tags. So I'm glad you didn't get the victory. I'm totally making that up. Tags wanted to do something like that just to win. What he hates?
I don't think so.
I wouldn't put it past him, though.
But you won, right? And did Tags get second, or did he get third? Jordan?
Tags got third behind.
Yeah,
Ray Bond,
boy.
So it was a great day.
I wasn't planning on bringing this up, at least not quite yet. I plan on bringing it up like two or three times this episode. But I did beat Tags in our yearly accuracy competition again. So I just figured everyone would want to know that before we get into today's show.
Well, the draft. Hold on a second. I just need to be clear about my draft accuracy thing, where injuries affect the draft accuracy so much in terms
big
of like
time.
AJ Green, I had him higher because I was willing to take a shot on him. That backfired. Antonio Brown, Odell Beckham, like my receivers, like that was just a bad time for me. And I apologize for that. I need to get better.
Well, also, it's a lot different when you're building your rankings based on projections than how you would draft them for fantasy football. You know what I mean? Yeah. But it's a lot of fun, man, and I'm just razzing you. You always beat me in the yearly rankings. I'm sorry, weekly.
So neither of us finished number one. If you ain't first, you're last. So Sean Corner, we had him on the podcast last week. The dude is just a machine, and yeah.
Well, he's first every time, man. I think we should do if you're not second, you're last.
No, if you're not first, you're last. And so if you're not Sean Corner, you're last, basically.
All I'm hearing from you guys is a bunch of excuses, though, because I finished above both of you.
Yeah, but you didn't beat Dan, so you're in last, baby.
Well, no, we exclude Dan from this conversation because it fits my narrative a little bit better.
Dan always does really well in those competitions as well. Guys, here's what we're going to be talking about today. We got deep sleepers, the perfect show for me to come back from. Actually, I did ask them to bump this one to this week, so I didn't miss it because you guys know I love my sleepers. Before we get into the show, though, we've got a contest going on. We're giving away a signed DeAndre Hopkins helmet. This is a Cardinals helmet. It's not a Texans helmet. You can check out the details at fantasypros.com/contest. All you need to do to sign up is you need to leave an honest review. We just want to hear what you think about the podcast, positive or negative, because we want to make the best show possible for you. So you leave an honest review on either Apple Podcasts or Stitcher, then send a screenshot of that review to contest at fantasypros.com. It takes like 30 seconds to do. And if you want more details, again, it's at fantasypros.com/contest. And also the contest ends on July 15th at 11:59 p.m. Eastern time. So please sign up now. We're running out of time. By the way, we're able to do all these contests thanks to Pristine Auction. If you guys want to check out pristineauction.com, you are going to love it. First of all, sign up. It's free to sign up and enter the registration code FANTASYPROS, all one word. That's going to get you $5 off your first purchase, and you are going to definitely be able to find something for your cave that you absolutely love. They've got stuff from all players and all teams, all kinds of sports. You can get a signed helmet. You can get a signed football. You can go get signed baseball stuff, signed jerseys. In fact, I even went out and got an awesome watch from Pristine Auction last week. They've got everything. They've got hundreds, sometimes even thousands of items they auction off every single day. And everything's guaranteed authentic from only the most trusted sources. So check out pristineauction.com. That's P-R-I-S-T-I-N-E auction.com. All right, guys, you ready to roll?
Let's do it.
Deep sleepers. Yates, you're first, buddy. Who do you have for us? Yates and Tags are each going to name 7. I'm going to name 6. We've already coordinated with each other. We usually don't do this, but we've coordinated with each other to make sure we're not stealing each other's players. That way we can get you 20 deep sleepers. So Yates, who's your number one?
Yeah, well, I'm going to talk about a super deep guy right now. It's Jace Sternberger, tight end in Green Bay. He is currently ECR tight end 25, ADP of tight end 28. So we're talking about he's only relevant right now within two tight end leagues. If you're deep leagues.
Like
best ball, where you're looking at Jace Sternberger. However, I did want to bring him up because he's walking into an amazing opportunity. You look at the Green Bay wide receiving core, and you're looking at guys like Davante Adams, and then guys, who's the number two?
Right.
Like, it's just a ton of question marks in this entire receiving core. Jace Sternberger was someone that I really liked coming out of Texas A&M last year. I had Noah Fant and TJ Hawkinson as my tight ends 1 and 2. And then it was Sternberger right behind him. I liked him more than Irv Smith coming out. So with Sternberger,
he's a great receiving tight end. He's not the complete package, but yeah. For fantasy, that's what matters.
Exactly. He's more of a move tight end. He's someone that you want to get the ball in their hands. He's athletic. He can create after the catch. So when you're looking at this offense and trying to say, okay, can we project Alan Lazard to take a huge step forward? Is MVS going to be the guy? Is it, you know, Jake Kumerow? There's a bunch of question marks, but Jace Sternberger is going to be on the field. You know, all these other guys, Devin Funchess, like there's just whoever wins out in camp, they're going to be on the field, but we know that Sternberger is going to be on the field in this offense. And if that's the case, there's a legitimate chance that he could be second on this team in targets. And so with a price tag of all the way down at tight end 28 in ADP right now, where I think he can finish well above that, he's worth the shot.
Tag, somebody is going to be number two in Aaron Rodgers' offense in targets. Now, Jace Sternberger, we know he's not the most likely. But is there a chance? And if so, how high is that chance?
I mean, there's a chance. I mean, Aaron Rodgers hasn't traditionally targeted tight ends a whole lot throughout his career. And if you go back a lot, this is something that a lot of people thought when Jimmy Graham went there and that he was going to be a stud. And I was betting against Jimmy Graham in his first year at Green Bay because Rodgers traditionally just hasn't targeted tight ends. Knowing that he has limited options, it all depends on the trust between Sternberger and Rodgers. Someone asked Sternberger about the connection that he and Rodgers have. And he says that, yeah, we've talked a little bit. He said that we're in different age groups. Like he tried to say that like he's like a kid compared to Aaron Rodgers and that they don't have a lot of similar interests, so they haven't talked a whole lot, which is really weird.
I mean, Jake Kumerow's a kid too, and Alan Lazard's a kid, but he loves those guys.
Right, but there are certain people that they try and spend the extra time with the quarterback and get to know them and develop that chemistry so that they, when they get on the field, they're getting targeted more. Sternberger, it's from what I gathered in that quote, he wasn't one like that was taking time out of his day to make sure he like was getting in Aaron Rodgers' head every day. It was more like, well, there's an age gap between us, so we don't really have the same interests and blah, blah, blah. But I definitely do see an avenue where this guy gets 4 to 5 targets per game. And I did like Sternberger out of college, too. The landing spot was interesting, and it was like waiting until to see if the Packers were going to snag a tight end in free agency or the draft, and they really didn't. So there's no competition for him outside of Mercedes Lewis, who's still on the roster. But I definitely see a way that he gets to 65, 70 targets. And if you get that as a tight end, you're going to be a streaming option most weeks. I mean, he's not going to be an every week starter, but for a team that's not being drafted, I think Sternberger's a good option here.
Yeah, I mean, and if Davante Adams gets hurt, all these guys are going to explode, right? Because Adams just gets so many damn
targets. Just run the ball 40 times per game.
Yeah, that's true.
Something that I want to bring up, too. Like, with Sternberger and this offense and what Green Bay is doing this offseason, it seems to indicate that they're moving more towards 12 personnel, right? Where we've seen the Rams move towards that. The 49ers run that quite a bit. So,
or like two fullbacks and a tight end.
Yeah, that's
and
probably
no
what
wide receivers.
Do.
Yeah,
where you're talking about these guys of Devin Funchess, Alan Lazard, you know, these guys who could be the second wide receiver. There's a very, very limited path for them to get on the field. However, Sternberger, like I said, he's going to be on the field. And so, like Tag said, I'm not sitting here saying that he's going to finish the season as a top 12 tight end and that he's going to be consistent, a consistent right. weekly option. Right. But he's going to be more relevant than his current price tag of tight end 28.
These deep sleepers, they're virtually all dart throws. You're looking to win the lottery here and you want upside. I don't want a seventh wide receiver with no upside. You know, like a Russell Gage type. Like, I get it if you're in a much deeper league and you need to play four or five wide receivers or best ball or something like that. If you're in one of these leagues with, you know, a deeper bench, you want the league winning type of players. And that's somebody like Jay Sternberger who could break out like Darren Waller was last year. Tex, let's get your first deep sleeper. These aren't in any kind of order, but just give me the first name on your list.
Yeah, I'm going to go ahead and we're going to go to the quarterback position. I'm going to say Gardner Minshew. Gardner Minshew is someone that, I mean, so in 2019, the average to finish as a top 18 fantasy quarterback, which is like a good floor for a quarterback, was 15.2 fantasy points. Gardner Minshew hit that mark in 71.4% of his starts. That there was only 11 quarterbacks that posted a higher number than him in that stage. So it kind of shows if you're looking for a quarterback in this range, what you're looking for is a floor, and you're looking for a guy that maybe could present a ceiling. And we did see that a little bit with Minshew last year, not crazy ceiling numbers, but that's because he didn't run the ball inside the 5 yard line. Leonard Fournette was getting every single carry inside the red zone. Gardner Minshew, in terms of what he ran for last year, he should have ended up with 4 or 5 rushing touchdowns. So if you add that onto his total, you're looking at a potential top 12 quarterback. I don't think he's going to get there because I've done a study on what does team scoring mean for fantasy football, which is up on the website now. And basically it says that if you don't play for a top 18 scoring offense, you're most likely not going to finish as a top 12 fantasy quarterback. And Gardner Minshew, they're not going to be a top 18 scoring offense, but it's a little bit of a Jameis Winston factor where you figure the defense is going to be relatively bad. The pass attempts are going to add up. They have a boring running back in the backfield, Leonard Fournette, who hasn't really gotten a whole lot done. So you're kind of just looking for some pass attempts out of Minshew, a guy that can rush the ball a little bit. And he has zero competition for that starting job. So he's going to be the starter for the entire year.
Yeah. And Gruden is always with rushing quarterbacks, quarterbacks that rush near the goal line. So I think Minshew's going to get those opportunities this year. And here's the most important thing. If you're drafting one of these quarterbacks, maybe in a two quarterback league that's, you know, a low end QB2, what are you targeting? You're targeting someone with a promising early season schedule. And they've got it. Indianapolis, Tennessee, that's the toughest one. Miami, Cincinnati, Houston, Detroit. Those are 6 good matchups. I mean, through 6 weeks, I think Minshew will be a top 12 fantasy quarterback. Now, it's not going to last all season. It gets ugly after the bye. But before the bye, those 6 games, I wouldn't mind having Gardner Minshew whatsoever in a two quarterback league. Gates, what do you think about this one?
No, I'm all on board. I mean, quarterback 20 last year and only 14 games played and being pulled in and out of the lineup. So, and I was shocked to come back to, you know, sitting down to do projections for this year. I was shocked to find out that Gardner Minshew had 344 rushing yards last year and averaged over 5 yards per carry. Like, that just shocked me. Like, I did not have him in this mindset of a rushing quarterback, but he's shown that he can move. And so that is incredibly valuable for fantasy football. And these guys who are, you know, dart throws, like Bobby said, these dart throws at the position, if you're looking at these guys later on, you know, don't go after a guy like Jimmy Garoppolo, who he has to do it on the back of high yardage total and incredible touchdown efficiency. Go for a guy who is mobile, who is able to pick up easy yards on the ground. So he doesn't have to throw for 27 touchdowns. He can throw for 20, but he rushes for 400 yards easy. You know, that puts him into this conversation. So yeah, I'm all on board.
Yeah, and the best part about Minshew is that he can straight up degaff it this year. He can go full Ryan Fitzpatrick. You know, like I think it's a foregone conclusion that the Jaguars are going to have one of the top 3 picks in next year's draft, and that they're going to be taking a quarterback. And he's kind of like auditioning out here. He has the job again. He doesn't have to worry about someone behind him on the depth chart taking over. Like looking at someone like maybe like a Tyrod Taylor or a Ryan Fitzpatrick. Those guys have rookies behind them that are challenging them for that starting job. Whereas Minshew can kind of just like do his thing and say, you know what, I'm gonna let it all out on the field. And that's kind of what he did last year, and the guy played with a lot of confidence. So Minshew is one of those guys, like, you could take a dart throw in the late rounds and I think you'll probably be happy more often than not.
His interception rate was still unbelievably low. 1.3%. Yeah. Lower than Brady, lower than Lamar Jackson, lower than Dak Prescott.
Yeah, I mean, for competition context, guys, he's got Mike Glennon and Josh Dobbs behind him. So Minshew's going to be the starter.
Josh Dobbs is a rocket scientist, man. I would not put anything past that guy. He's legitimately, like, that's what he studied.
But he's not good. I know. He's not good at football, though, where it matters.
Sure. You're right. Okay, so I was going to say Marquez Valdes-Scantling as my first one, but I'm actually going to just skip Marquez Valdes-Scantling because that's the same exact argument as Jay Sternberger. He's got a lot of athleticism. Maybe it could happen with Aaron Rodgers. Instead, I'm going to go with someone that I put on special mention, and Yates, you also had him as well. And it's not so much that I believe he's going to start, but there's an opportunity for him to start in the same way Darius Slayton did last year for the Giants, because he's just really good at football. When I watched Jakobi Meyers play football, I thought, dang, how did this guy not get drafted? He's really dang good. He's not the most athletic guy in the world, but he gets football. He's going to find a way open, and I think that he's going to find a way onto the field for the Patriots. And if he does, I think he might be better than N'Keal Harry. Belichick's not going to give N'Keal Harry all the chances in the world. If Myers starts in this Patriots offense, somebody's got to get targets, right? It can't just be all Julian Edelman, and I think that it could be Myers. Yates, what do you think?
Well, I mean, I had him on my list for a reason, because you're looking at an opportunity, really in this range of, and we're talking about outside the top 100, you know, wide receivers in ADP right now. So this is an absolute dart throw. But as you're looking at these guys outside the top 100 and in this range, you're looking for opportunity. A lot of the other guys are like the fifth wide receiver on their team. You know, do you want to be taking Auden Tate, or do you want to be taking Jakobi Meyers, who could legitimately be a starter in this offense, regardless of whether or not he beats out N'Keal Harry? You know, you're looking at Mohamed Sanu, slot role, Julian Edelman, slot role, Demir Byrd, you know, I'm not super scared of him. But outside of that, guys, like, it is a wide open competition here for the wide receivers. And Jakobi Meyers actually outproduced N'Keal Harry last year, like, significantly. So I think he's definitely underrated as a talent. And again, this is a pure dart throw, but I'm on board with it.
All right, Yates, back to you for your number two, buddy.
Yeah, I will bring up here, I'm going to bring up Tyler Eifert. I'm just going to knock out the tight ends right on my list here. So Tyler Eifert, again, this is not anything that anyone that I'm bringing up in consideration for a top 12 finish on the season, right? Like, I have to just put that into context. This is for two tight end leagues, super, super deep leagues. But right now, guys, Tyler Eifert is going as the tight end 41 in ADP, and he's the tight end 33 in ECR. We're talking about the same arguments with Jacksonville and Gardner Minshew, where they're going to be throwing the ball a ton this year. This defense lost a lot of key pieces. Yes, they added some really nice pieces with CJ Henderson, Kalavon Chaisson. Like, I like those players, but they are not going to have the immediate impact that, you know, Jalen Ramsey to AJ Bouye to Calais Campbell had. So, you know, we're looking at this team and we're saying, okay, they're going to be passing the ball quite a bit. At that point, Tyler Eifert becomes relevant just based on the back of pure target volume, because you're looking at guys like DJ Chark, DD Westbrook, maybe LaVisca Chenault starts on the outside. I'm not sure exactly what his role is going to look like. Maybe it's Chris Conley. But then Tyler Eifert is going to be relevant within the red zone. That's where he's made his money throughout his career. He proved that he can stay healthy. Last season, he played all 16 games. This is a guy who I think can be relevant in certain matchups. If you say that, okay, Jacksonville, we're looking at this matchup. Let's just say, I don't have the schedule up, but let's just say they play Kansas City. You know that they're going to get destroyed and they're going to be in a negative game script. Well, at that point, I'm fine rolling out Tyler Eifert on a bye week, because there's a very good chance that he gets 7 targets, 8 targets. At that point, you know, I'm perfectly fine rolling him into my lineup. So just keep him in mind. I know that he's burned a lot of people in the past. If you've been playing fantasy football for any, you know, significant number of years, you know the name Tyler Eifert, and you know that he was amazing in, what, 2015, and then hasn't been good since then. But new situation here in Jacksonville, he's going to be the starter, and I think he's going to have relevance.
I'm a little bit worried about Josh Oliver, and I'm going to push back on this one, Yates, just because I don't really love the upside here. I mean, last year he was on a team that threw the ball 616 times, and finally Tyler Eifert stayed healthy for the entire season. He had 436 yards and 3 touchdowns. He lost his job to CJ Uzama. I get it, the Jags paid him. I just don't really see the upside, and I think the Jags actually have some talent at the wide receiver position, Tex.
Yeah, I think it came down to coaching, the reason that he wasn't used in Cincinnati last year. I don't think Zach Taylor's offense is really tailored to the tight end, whereas you go to someone like Jay Gruden, and it's a little bit different, right? I actually do believe there's going to be some production to come out of this tight end duo, if you will. That's my question, though, because Eifert did actually play under Jay Gruden in Cincinnati back, I think it was 2013, 2014. For 1 year, it wasn't like his most...
They had like 1 year of overlap.
Yeah, it wasn't like his most productive year. I think it was his rookie year that he was there, if I'm not mistaken. But then... So he has a little bit of familiarity with the offense, whereas Josh Oliver's a young tight end, didn't play a whole lot last year due to injuries. I don't know what they're expecting out of Oliver. I actually think that they want Oliver. It's almost like Eifert may be there as a tutor and someone that he starts the year, you know, is the starting tight end, and then they slowly transition into Oliver. I think there's a chance at that, which is why I stay away from Eifert. If I knew that Eifert was going to be the starter while he was healthy the entire year, I'm kind of with Yates in this one. I think there's going to be production to be had. And again, it's a different role than he was playing in Cincinnati. It's just a different offense where they're going to utilize that tight end a little bit more. Because again, Gruden, go back to Jordan Reed's days, man. I mean, when he was on the field, that dude was money. Even Vernon Davis was a guy that we streamed quite a bit, even in his later years under Jay Gruden. I know Jeremy Sprinkle sucked, but I mean, it's Jeremy Sprinkle.
Oh, so bad. Yeah. I think just to push back on your pushing back on my argument, Bobby, I think with Josh Oliver, he was super, super raw coming out of San Diego State, I think.
San Jose State. He was supposed to go like the sixth round. They took him so early.
You know, I think he was someone who was super, super raw. And then last year, he needed playing time. He needed experience. Only played four games, injured, six targets on the season for 15 and turned it into 15 total yards. You know, so I'm not sitting here saying that Josh Oliver, I don't think he's going to be any sort of real threat this year. I think that they brought in Eifert for a reason, and maybe that reason is to be a tutor, but I don't think that Oliver is going to get any significant playing time this season.
That's totally fair. All right, Tags, back to you for number two.
All right, my second one, I'm going to go to the running back position. I'm going to talk about Damian Harris. You know,
you just read right off my deep sleeper list with Minshew and Harris. I see the next couple names too. I love it.
Yeah, he's just a guy that many people have forgotten about, that the Patriots drafted in the third round last year. You know, Sony Michel has been extremely inefficient in his time, and this team is clearly moving in a different direction. They're going to run the ball more. They're not going to throw the ball 600 plus times like they did with Brady. So not only are there more rushing attempts available, but Sony Michel has just been flat out bad. He had another surgery this offseason on his foot. So these surgeries are adding up. He doesn't look like the same player he was in college. There's a whole bunch of things and a whole bunch of reasons that they drafted Damian Harris. He wasn't on the field last year because he doesn't play special teams. So when he is active on game day, you know he's going to get some carries. So he's a guy that I would love to snag in the later rounds. Obviously, at running back, it's really difficult to find guys that are undrafted who are going to get touches like immediately and have an immediate impact. But it's rare. It is also rare to find a guy that's undrafted who could potentially be the starter at the beginning of the year, because James White is not a guy they're going to trust carrying the ball a lot. Rex Burkhead is, well, he's old and they're not giving him a lot of carries. He's a bit player. And then you have Sony Michel, who's dealing with these injuries, has been inefficient. Who's to say that Damian Harris doesn't outplay him, you know, in their training camp, and they're saying, we're going to move forward Damian Harris because he's going to do exactly what we need him to do. He's going to follow his blocks. He's going to, if they want to play this game managing style, Damian Harris is better than Sony Michel. I'm sorry, like in that role that they want him to play. So to find a guy that's undrafted, I believe there's better than a 10% chance that he wins that starting job.
Right. I was going to say the same exact thing. So you can look at all of these guys who are handcuffs. The next guy I was going to mention, Reichwell Armstead, we'll just pass over him because I just want to bring him up as a point here. He's got a chance. If Leonard Fournette gets traded or hurt, he could be a three down back. Now, I left him out because Chris Thompson's there now. But Reichwell Armstead, he's a good running back. He's a lot like Chris Carson when you watch him play. And you can take a gamble on someone like that and just say, okay, there's a 5 to 10% chance the starting running back gets hurt for an extended period of time. And so I want this guy. It doesn't require that for Damian Harris because Sony Michel's coming off foot surgery this offseason. Like, it just happened a couple of months ago. There's a chance that Damian Harris, I would say a 20, 25% chance that he leads this team in touches. Would you agree with that, Yates? And if so, why would we not draft him in the last round every single time?
I personally don't agree. I think that they're going to continue to rely on Sony Michel. He's just got too high of a draft pedigree for them to move on from him. I get it, but I think also too, like, he's not just going to go away. Now, if he gets injured, of course, that's a whole different conversation. But as far as what Tags is bringing up of if Damian Harris is going to just outright, you know, outplay Sony Michel in training camp, I just don't see that happening. I don't see them completely just putting Sony Michel on the bench. Just based on they invested, it was a first round pick in him, wasn't it?
Well, yeah, it was. It was late.
But we're talking about a coach who cut Jonas Gray after he had 5,000 yards in one game.
But it was also a third-round pick on Harris, so he was a day-two pick. He wasn't a throwaway pick.
Right. No, I understand that. So I'm just saying that for Damian Harris to have fantasy relevance, he has to be the clear-cut starter. And I just don't see them moving on from Sony Michel at this point. Maybe next year, if Sony Michel continues to be just woefully inefficient, I can see that happening. But as far as this year, I just don't see the chance. Now, I think he's someone who I'm not going to say that you should draft in a super deep league. I'm saying that I think he should be someone that you should at least keep an eye on the waiver wire, because I don't think he's going to be someone that you can safely rely on to begin the season.
When Michel came back from his last injury in December, he went 19 for 89, 21 for 96, 18 for 74 in a score, 14 for 61 against Tennessee in the playoffs when they were playing from behind. That's not bad, man. If we can get Sony Michel healthy on the field, I want to draft him. But coming off a foot surgery, I don't mess with running backs coming off a foot surgery. So I think it might be Damian Harris. I'm excited about him. Guys, we're going to get to my number two here in just a second. But first, did you guys know we have a YouTube channel? Not only are you going to get to see all of our football podcasts there at our YouTube channel, youtube.com/fantasypros, but each Monday up through the end of August, we're going to be posting a new mock draft on our YouTube channel where both Tags and either Yates or a guest are going to compete against each other. I'm going to win, of course. And we're going to share our thoughts with each and every pick. You'll get to see our draft screens and what it looks like, how we use it, all the premium tools and offerings. And you can check all this and our other video content out at youtube.com/fantasypros. And please hit that subscribe button. That way you'll get notified for each new video we post and you don't miss out on great fantasy football content as you're preparing for your fantasy football drafts. Again, that's youtube.com/fantasypros. All right, my number two, let me pull up my list here. I'm going to go with Paris Campbell. Yates, you also had him on your list. It seems like we agree on a lot of wide receivers, which is good because you did incredible in the wide receiver rankings. I did really bad in the wide receiver rankings. I was the running back guy last year. So hopefully you're not coming to my side. I'm coming to your side. We both like Paris Campbell. Again, this is a fluent situation in Indianapolis where T.Y. Hilton's getting old. He's eventually going to be replaced. And who do they draft to replace him? Paris Campbell. The same player as T.Y. Hilton, but bigger and faster. Now, we didn't get to see much of Paris Campbell, but he's a very talented football player who's finally going to get the chance to showcase who he is. And the number two spot is up for grabs. Maybe the number one spot is up for grabs. I think he's a guy who could take a big step forward. Now, Yates, we know you agree. So I'm going to let Tags take his shot at us and tell us why we're wrong if he wants to. And then, Yates, you can piggyback on my argument.
I won't tell you guys wrong. I'm not going to say that. Paris Campbell's a fine player to take a shot on. Yates has talked about Michael Pittman as a guy that in that offense. And I like
either or. Sure.
I like the idea of drafting Pittman with one of your final picks because he's a guy that you're going to find out week one exactly what you have here. It's like, is he an every down player? Isn't he? Because if he's not an every down player, you cut him. You let him go. Paris Campbell, I think it's a foregone conclusion that if Pittman starts in the perimeter, they're going to have T.Y. Hilton and that Paris Campbell is going to be on the field in three wide receiver sets, which is a staple of Frank Reich's offense. You know, they do run a lot of three and sometimes four wide receiver sets. So Campbell's going to be out there. He's going to be a guy that for me, it's going to be more based on matchup as like a streaming wide receiver. And again, to find receivers that are undrafted that are going to produce for you on a weekly basis, it's almost unrealistic. You just have to find guys that you're projecting to win that starting job. And Paris Campbell's a guy that they were extremely high on last year. They drafted him at the top of the second round. So I do believe he has a role. And then when you go to Phillip Rivers, a guy who has loved his targets over the middle of the field, you know, back to Eddie Royal, back to Antonio Gates, Hunter Henry, Keenan Allen, these are guys over the middle of the field. So if Campbell has that slot role locked down that they were giving to Chester Rogers over the last couple of years, I do believe that Campbell can make a splash, especially if he is somehow over Michael Pittman to start the year, even in two wide receiver sets, because the concern here is that there's overlap between T.Y. Hilton and Paris Campbell and the type of players that they are. Paris Campbell, I know people don't want to hear it because T.Y. Hilton's been so good for so long, but Paris Campbell is a bigger, faster version of T.Y. Hilton. And I think that he was the replacement because this is the final year of T.Y. Hilton's career with the Colts. He's on the final year of his contract. So I dig this one. I'm a little bit torn on if there's going to be consistent production out of Pittman and or Campbell. I just want to see how the snap counts work out. And that's why it's so important, guys, in weeks one and two to be able to shift from how you felt about players to seeing the actual snap counts, seeing how many routes they're run, seeing what quarterback like Phillip Rivers, who he favors. So I dig this one. It's just be willing to cut them if you have to immediately.
It's like last year when Devontae Parker was starting, we were like, okay, it's finally happened. Everybody pick up Devontae Parker. That stuff happens. You know exactly who to pick up in weeks one and week two. Those guys can prove to be league winners. Like Phillip Lindsay, who knew back in his rookie season, he was going to be the starter. When he was, you had to pick him up because you knew what you had. All right, Yates, did you want to say anything positive about Paris Campbell?
I'll mention just with Paris Campbell that I think the best part about this is that we're not sitting here saying that he's a top 40 wide receiver or that that's where you're drafting him, right? He's in this podcast for a reason. He's a deep sleeper. So I think that currently him and T.Y. Hilton kind of cancel each other out from a fantasy perspective. Just I think Michael Pittman's obviously going to be on the field. He's going to be the X receiver. He's never coming off the field. He's going to see significant targets. That's just kind of who Phillip Rivers locks onto downfield. But then looking at T.Y. Hilton and Paris Campbell and the roles, Tags mentioned, there's a little bit of an overlap here. So I think that he is someone that you can draft super late. Like I got him in the 18th or 19th round of Scott Fishbowl. So I got him super late. If Hilton misses time again, then great. Campbell is going to be
he'd be an every week
relevant.
Starter at that point.
Yeah, every week starter, guaranteed. And you're getting him right now. His ADP, guys, is wide receiver 73. Excuse me. So right now you're getting him super, super late.
All right, back to you, Yates, for number three. Who are you going with?
Yeah, I'm going to bring up Josh Kelly. We've talked about him a little bit here, and I know that Bobby is on the Justin Jackson side, but
I'm going to fight you on this one so hard.
I was about to say, there's a fight coming on.
But we're talking about these guys who are deep sleepers, and especially when we're talking about the running back position, because you can go into drafts, and you can, like I just mentioned with Paris Campbell, you can find valuable wide receivers super, super late. You know, Jacoby Myers, super, super late. These guys that are going to be relevant, you know, at some point in the season, if things break their way, you get past a certain round, like the 13th round in redraft leagues and ADP, and running backs are, you look at the running backs and you're like, I don't want to draft any of these guys. But when you're talking about someone who could carve out a significant role for themselves this season, it's Josh Kelly. If he beats out Justin Jackson for the starting role, he was a fourth round pick from this current coaching staff. If he beats out Justin Jackson, he's going to be the starting running back alongside Austin Eckler. He'll fill the Melvin Gordon role, and in a running offense, an offense that will have a mobile quarterback that does nothing but help out the running game, the other running backs. So he could be someone who, I'm not saying that he's going to have 250 carries on the season, I'm not projecting anything ridiculous like that, but he could have a very high yards per carry, and if that's the case, scoring opportunities are going to be there as well. So I'm not sitting here saying that he's going to be a top 24 running back, anything like that, you know, like I said, but he can be someone that if you're in the back end of your draft and you loaded up on wide receiver early and you need to take a dart throw at someone at running back, Josh Kelly is a fine pick.
The argument makes a ton of sense. And that's why I like Justin Jackson. It's just a difference between me loving Justin Jackson as the player, you loving Joshua Kelly as a player, at least thinking he's better than Justin Jackson, right? One of these guys is going to have a substantial role. And that's not saying Austin Eckler's ever going to come off the field, because Austin Eckler moves all around the field. In fact, Eckler was talking about this on Twitter just the other day when some fantasy football analyst was saying, you know, don't draft Austin Eckler because he's not going to get as many carries. Well, he's like, well, dude, I'm going to move out to slot receiver. That means I'm going to be getting targets on those plays. And he's right. Austin Eckler is going to get a lot of touches, but another running back is going to get a lot of carries while he's out of the slot. I think it's going to be Jackson. I couldn't bring him up in this because we set our standard at after pick 180, which is after the 15th round. Jackson's 176 right now in ADP. But I totally get it. If it's Joshua Kelly instead of Justin Jackson, then I would want Joshua Kelly. I think that he would be a great late round pick. Tags, who do you prefer between the two, or do you prefer neither?
I'm really torn on this. I mean, I'm guessing it's probably got to be Kelly, just because why would they draft him if they had Jackson on the roster? Again, they probably need a third running back, so I wouldn't be shocked if it's Jackson. I do think Jackson's the better running back, in my opinion, and he has shown the ability to be efficient in the NFL. I mean, he's spot started before. He's done it. He averaged, you know, Bobby talks about it all the time. He averaged like over 6 yards per carry last year. And Justin
Almost
Jackson,
seven.
I brought it up on Twitter, Bobby. I don't know if you saw it because you were on vacation last week, but Justin Jackson, is it possible that he's this year's Raheem Mostert?
Yes.
You know, like looking at it and just saying he's a forgotten man. People thought of him as like third or fourth in the depth chart. He's a guy that was extremely efficient with the touches he's been given throughout his career, just never really gets the opportunity. This Chargers team is going to run the ball more in 2020. That there's no question about that. They're not throwing the ball a whole lot with Tyrod Taylor under center. People talk about the Melvin Gordon role. It's going to be bigger than the Melvin Gordon role because Melvin Gordon, you know, was limited in his carries because he was splitting with Eckler and they were throwing the ball nearly 600 times per year. So I'm really curious about how this backfield shakes out. This is one of those ones we definitely want to pay attention to in week one because it's going to be a valuable role. I actually think that Joshua Kelly or Justin Jackson, one of those guys, is going to be a guy that you could probably start most weeks in the flex. We just don't know which one it is right now. And it's something
you could
that
just draft them both and then just cut whoever.
I was literally just about to say, I was about to ask the question. I was like, so guys, is a good strategy? Because Justin Jackson's ADP is RB56 right now. Kelly's is RB70. So is a bold strategy just, or like a good strategy, excuse me, just to say, I'm going to draft Justin Jackson.
It's not.
And then I'm going to, in like two rounds later, I'm going to draft Josh Kelly and I'll lock up that backfield.
I don't think it's a bad idea. And the reason I say that, because some people are going to say, oh, you're wasting a valuable bench space. But I don't agree with that, because I think in weeks one and two, you have to have players on your roster you're going to drop that you have to just cut bait with.
You're right.
Because you're going to need to pick up waivers. Those are the most important weeks. So I really don't have an issue with that strategy.
Well, and I mean, it would work out that at that point we would have clarity on what this backfield's going to look like. So if it is Justin Jackson, then great, cut Josh Kelly, and then you can pick up another waiver wire. If it's
a messy timeshare, cut them both.
Yeah, right. Whichever one it ends up being, I'd rather have that player than Darius Geis, who's going RB27 right now.
Right.
You agree, Yates? Tags, are you with us?
I'm not going to go that far, but
did you see the picture of Darius Geis' hamstrings?
His massive thighs?
Oh my goodness. Yes.
I posted on Twitter.
We're in the part of the offseason where it's picture offseason. I remember Terrell Pryor and all the pictures we saw him.
I posted on Twitter. I was like, Darius Geis' hamstrings are bigger than my torso, and I'm not even joking.
I don't think you're. Yeah, I think you're.
No,
correct.
You're not exaggerating, man.
They're ridiculous.
Zach, did you fall for Terrell Pryor back in the day?
Hell no.
Good, man. Good. All right. I wanted to push back, actually. I love Justin Jackson, but I disagree that the running backs are going to get more carries than they did last year, because, okay, Tyrod Taylor is going to throw the ball 80 fewer times than Phillip Rivers did last year. Mm-hmm. That's going to be 80 more rushing opportunities for the quarterback.
I don't think Tyrod Taylor's at the age where he's going to run the ball 100 times.
I think that they signed him to a one-year contract, and they're just going to run the ball as much as he can handle, and then it's Herbert time.
He's going to need to run that offensive line. Whew.
Yeah, it's not good, but Tyrod's got some good matchups. He's going to be a lot of fun. In fact, he's my next player. Tags, it's your turn, buddy.
This one's going to be interesting to some people. I'm going to go with Anthony McFarland.
Yeah.
And the reason I'm doing that is because Mike Tomlin talked about James Conner having a workhorse role. That's fine. We're anticipating that, right? And then he talked about Benny Snell being the guy that would kind of back him up in that role, which tells me they have a specific role for Anthony McFarland in this offense. They really do. You don't draft a guy in the third round if you don't have a role for him. And McFarland is a guy that, again, going back to the draft, when I comped him, I compared him to Chris Thompson, a bigger Chris Thompson, a guy that you want to get 8 to 12 touches per game, and he's explosive. When they drafted him as high as they did, I was like, okay, this is interesting, because he would be a compliment to Connor. And if Ben Roethlisberger, we've talked about this, if his arm isn't quite what it used to be, that he checks down maybe a little bit more, someone like Anthony McFarland could be a big piece of this offense. And if he is only getting those 8 to 12 touches per game, that's fine. He could be a Tariq Cohen, Chris Thompson type running back, James White.
I was just going to say he's Tariq Cohen all over again, except faster.
These guys have certain roles in the NFL, and they're valuable roles, especially if you play in like a PPR format. So again, I'm reading between the tea leaves here, and he didn't even mention McFarland when talking about Connor and Snell, who are basically the early down backs that are going to get some targets in the passing game. But I believe when you draft someone like McFarland, they have a specific role in mind, and I think that he's going to offer more fantasy viability for guys that are going that zero running back approach or late running back approach. I think that he's a guy you might want on your roster.
I also want to say there's people who are saying, well, he's too small. There's no way that Anthony McFarland could ever be a number one. I don't think Benny Snell's the actual number two. Well, he might be right now going to training camp, the way they always say that with veterans over rookies.
Benny Snell is your favorite, Bobby. What are you talking about?
I liked Benny Snell on tape back in college, okay?
Yeah, I like Sony Michel too, so we both
failed. I was wrong, okay? But Ray Rice was a true three-down workhorse RB1. And guess who's bigger than him? Anthony McFarland. They're the same height, and Anthony McFarland has an extra 10 pounds. Oh, and he's faster than Ray Rice. This is a special football player. When I watched him on tape, man, he's explosive. He can take any play to the house, and I love this, regardless of what role he has. And this kind of reminds me of Justice Hill last year, right? If he gets an opportunity, he's going to be really good. And then Justice Hill didn't get an opportunity. They were handing the ball to Gus Edwards in these blowouts. So I don't know, man. Like, that's the thing with these late round sleepers. It's a total dart throw. You've got a 70% chance at missing, a 30% chance of hitting. And if you hit, it's going to be awesome. Like Tariq Cohen was his rookie year when he was an RB1.
Yeah, I like McFarland. I think the skill set is good. And obviously playing in a high scoring offense with a role. Like I said, this has more to do with Mike Tomlin talking, like totally leaving him out of the conversation between Snell and Connor, which means he views him as a different running back. And is it possible that he works his way into more touches because of that explosiveness, because you don't want to take guys like that off the field? Absolutely. But I do think he has a role. And again, is a flex player in a PPR format, if he works out like a Chris Thompson, like gets that many touches, or like a Tariq Cohen, he's a guy with some explosiveness to make those plays count. And again, flex potential for a guy that's undrafted at running back, that's hard to find.
And I want you to keep in mind, if you watched his tape last year, Tags, he was dealing with an ankle injury all last year.
I was going to bring that up.
Yeah, back in 2018, he was amazing, man. 131 carries, and he took it for over 1,000 yards on the ground. It's 8 yards per carry, dude.
That's absurd.
He catches the ball like a stud.
Yeah, I was going to say, you know, I'll put on my scouting hat and go back to watching him in 2018. His Ohio State game, and keep in mind, Anthony McFarland is out of Maryland. Like, Maryland's not a very high-powered program, and Anthony McFarland single-handedly just destroyed Ohio State's defense. You know, he was just absolutely insane. And then, so I had him rated very highly going into the 2019 college football season, and then he deals with an ankle injury. He's got some issues that he needs to work on. He doesn't run with patience behind the line of scrimmage. That's going to need to be ironed out. But if you're getting him in that, like, Chris Thompson role, like what Tags was mentioning, where you just get him into space, good night. Like, this guy is just going to be, you know, insane. So go watch. If you're listening and you don't know the name Anthony McFarland, like, pause the podcast, go to YouTube, look up his highlights, because this guy is absolutely insane. I think he could have even been someone that you guys talked about on the last week's podcast, Tags, of like an ADP riser. Like, I think people are going to find out real quick what Anthony McFarland can do.
It's a good offense for him. This is the same exact argument we had last year about Justice Hill. But that doesn't mean we're wrong again. It just means that it's the process, right?
Stay away from Justice Hill, Bobby.
I'm staying away from Justice Hill. What I'm saying is, one out of four times, that type of running back is going to hit big, just like Tariq Cohen did a couple years ago.
Yeah, well, the thing, too, with Justice Hill is that Justice Hill was really, really fast in a straight line. He doesn't have lateral explosiveness, lateral agility. McFarland does. And so
that's what you want.
Yeah, that's what you want in an NFL running back, in addition to 4.4 speed. You know, so yeah, I really like McFarland.
I'm going to go with a better backup running back than Anthony McFarland. I don't think he's a better football player, but he's in a much better situation. It's Darrington Evans. And look, I'm not saying Derrick Henry's going to get hurt. In fact, he's probably the least likely running back in all of football to get hurt. But running backs like that get hurt. David Johnson was like that, right? How could David Johnson ever get hurt? The dude just steamrolls everybody. He's a freak of nature. And then what happens? Breaks his wrist. Stuff like that happens. And if it happens, who is the clear-cut backup running back in Tennessee? It's Darrington Evans. He's going to be able to handle the workload. Catches the ball as well. He's coming in behind a great offensive line, a great running scheme. Team that's going to be playing from ahead a lot. Darrington Evans could be a low-end RB1, high-end RB2 if Derrick Henry was to go down. I'd like to roster him for the first week or two. And you know what? If Derrick Henry doesn't get hurt in the preseason, I need to cut someone. Who am I cutting? I'm cutting Darrington Evans. But I'm taking that lottery ticket. It's a 5% chance. And if I hit, I'm going to hit big. It's going to be a league winner type, just like James Conner when we recommended him on the podcast 3 years ago. Just like Kareem Hunt when we recommended him on the podcast 3 years ago. Those kind of guys can be absolute gold.
I was against you on this early on in the offseason, where, you know, you were mentioning if Derrick Henry gets hurt, then Darrington Evans is going to be like a top, you know, top 12 running back. But the more that we move into the offseason and we're now turning the corner towards training camp, and you're looking at, okay, if Derrick Henry gets injured, it's not like they have a plethora of options in free agency. You know, like, it's Lamar Miller, Devontae Freeman. Like, those are guys that they're not taking Derrick Henry's role. You know, so at that point, Darrington Evans is going to have standalone value in and of himself, just with the role that he has in this offense. He's a spark plug. He's a perfect change of pace back. He's going to assume the vacated Deion Lewis role. And towards the beginning of the season, they were giving Deion Lewis enough work. So I think, yeah, Evans is going to be fine by himself, but then he actually could have a ton of value if Derrick Henry gets injured.
Tags, why didn't you pick Darrington Evans over Anthony McFarland, dude?
I mean, because he doesn't have a role without injury. Basically, you look back to Deion Lewis, a guy that they were paying a lot of money to, and they didn't involve him in the offense very much, and rightfully so. You want to get Derrick Henry out there. I like Darrington Evans as a player. I think that he's a good football player, and I felt like he would belong well in a timeshare. I didn't think that he was a workhorse running back that would handle a million carries or anything like that, but someone who could be in the 1A, 1B situation where he's, you know, playing in that timeshare, kind of like a Charger situation. I like Darrington Evans, and the reason that you kind of have to like him a little bit more is because the Titans are preparing for life potentially without Derrick Henry after 2020. They have him on the franchise tag this year. It seems like they're not going to come to an agreement on a long-term deal, so the Titans have to understand that their depth chart is very fluid and that they have to be prepared for a situation where Derrick Henry is not with the team. And drafting Darrington Evans in the third round says that they were extremely high on him. For a running back to be drafted that high, he's going to have a chance to climb the depth chart. There's no one else in the roster that can compete with him for that number two job. So if something did happen to Derrick Henry, Darrington Evans is a much better pass catcher, obviously, and he can get some work done. The team would, I'm guessing they'd probably sign someone else to split the load with him because, again, they don't have anybody else in the roster. But Darrington Evans is a guy that I'm fine with taking a shot, but he's more of a handcuff than he is a producer right now.
I was looking up Deion Lewis's game logs from last year because I thought that he had more of a role at the beginning of the season than he did. He only had three carries the first like three games and four targets and then one target and one target. Like he was not involved. However, if we remember week 15, Derrick Henry missed and they gave Deion Lewis 15 carries. So, I mean, they gave Deion Lewis 15 carries. You know, Darrington Evans is more talented than Deion Lewis. So there's a definite role that if Derrick Henry misses time, we could be seeing 15, 18 carries from Darrington Evans.
All right, Yates, back to you, man. And here's what we're going to do, okay? Because we were a little bit long-winded on some of these players. I want you to pick your one player left that you're especially excited about. Give your long-winded argument on him. And then after that, we're going to, same with you, Tags. I'm going to do one more like that. And then we're going to go lightning round and name all the rest of the players so we can get to all 20 deep sleepers.
All right.
Oh, I have two of them.
Go for both of them, man. You can take mine.
Okay. I'm going to go with Devin Duvernay to begin. Devin Duvernay, wide receiver out of Texas. Guys, 106 receptions last season, one drop at Texas. Incredible. Incredible route runner out of the slot. He is as sure-handed as you're going to find. He is a monster after the catch, too. He's someone, go look up Devin Duvernay and Grant Delpit. Grant Delpit, a highly touted safety last year at LSU. Devin Duvernay, twice in one game, bowls him over in the open field. I compared him coming out to a mix between Golden Tate and Deebo Samuel. That's kind of the player that we need to be thinking about him as. Guys, he's going undrafted. Like, outside the top 350 picks in ADP, I think he is an absolute value, and I think that he is a perfect fit for this offense. 19 total touchdowns for the Ravens last season out of the slot. Now, granted, you had Mark Andrews moving into the slot. Marquise Brown even moved into the slot in some instances, of course. Guys, Willie Snead had 5 receiving touchdowns last year. Devin Duvernay is going to have a significant role in this offense. He's someone who you can get the ball to short and he can create after the catch, which is perfect for Lamar Jackson and this offense. Just keep the ball moving down the field. Devin Duvernay is in a fantastic spot to contribute this season for fantasy football. And I think that, you know, him going undrafted is ridiculous right now.
Tags, you know who he reminds me of is Lee Evans. Do you remember him from Buffalo back in the day?
I remember Lee Evans.
Yeah, Lee Evans had some really dang good seasons, man. 1,300 receiving yards for 8 touchdowns. Didn't he break the single game record for receptions too? Like 20 receptions in a game?
I don't know. I don't remember if he did that. I remember Brandon Marshall had a couple games that were crazy, way up there. This is the first one I'm going to really disagree with Yates on. And I know he's big on Duvernay, but I mean, that Texas offense, a lot of guys like Lil Jordan Humphrey was a guy that people liked coming out of college a little bit. I didn't like him very much. And Duvernay's a better player for sure. But my issue here, it has nothing to do with Duvernay the player. It has to do everything to do with the offense. I don't think this offense supports more than 2 viable pass catching options. And that's basically saying you believe that Duvernay is going to pass Mark Andrews or Marquise Brown, and he's not better than either of those guys. So Marquise Brown is a breakout candidate if they start throwing the ball more, and because he should be getting more targets. Obviously, having a healthy offseason is going to help him. Mark Andrews, you're not going to give him fewer targets because he's just a monster. So trying to find a third guy in this offense that's going to, you know, catch passes at any rate, like even if there's an injury to a Willie Snead, I don't even think it matters because, again, you're talking about 3 guys in this team. This defense is phenomenal. One of the best defenses in the NFL. The offense doesn't throw the ball more than 30 times per game. They have some running backs that can catch the ball out of the backfield. It just comes down to me where it's like there's just not enough balls to go around this offense. So it's not so much me attacking Duvernay, but just the actual offense itself and saying, I believe in Marquise Brown that he's much better than Duvernay in terms of like how he aligns with Lamar Jackson and what he does and then Mark Andrews. So it's just about that.
I like the landing spot in terms of I could see him starting, but I don't like the landing spot in terms of target availability. Like if he landed with the Colts or the Packers, that would have been a lot better. By the way, I found the Lee Evans stat. He set a record catching 205 yards in the first quarter against Houston in 2006.
Oh my word.
205 in one quarter. Oh my goodness.
That's
ridiculous.
That is ridiculous.
For context here though, like I have Marquise Brown at wide receiver 33 right now. I have him seeing 96 targets. I have Mark Andrews at tight end 4 seeing 114 targets. And then Devin Duvernay, I have at 77 targets for 54 receptions, 655 yards, and 5 receiving touchdowns. So, and I have him at wide receiver 58. So I'm not sitting here saying that, again, with a lot of these guys, the context is that I'm not saying that Devin Duvernay is going to be a top 40 wide receiver. I'm not saying that he's going to pass Marquise Brown, anything like that. What I am saying is that for him to go undrafted is ridiculous when I have him all the way up at wide receiver 58 with a very, very clear role on this team.
I think it's just a difference in philosophy where I would much prefer somebody who's got that upside to be a wide receiver 3. I don't see Duvernay having that upside. I see him being a decent wide receiver 5 that, okay, you could plug him in bye weeks and maybe he's okay in certain matchups. Overall, sure, he's going to finish. I agree. I think he's going to finish in the top 60 or 70 wide receivers and he's going to produce value above his ADP. But I want somebody who I can plug in and play and start if he gets that opportunity. And if not, I'll pick somebody else up. You know what I mean? Tags, back to you. Give us your long-winded one. Yates, we'll come back to you for another one before we go to mine.
I'm going to say Dede Westbrook is someone that I believe is a fantastic target. If you're looking for someone that can potentially, like, again, undrafted, it blows my mind because Dede Westbrook last year was someone I was telling people to stay away from because of his ADP. His ADP was in the top 30 wide receivers. It may have fallen to like that 32 range, which is still starting in fantasy football. And I was like, why are you drafting Dede Westbrook? Like, you could just get Jamison Crowder much later and get the same results. But now it's flip-flopped where Jamison Crowder is still not going high enough. But Dede Westbrook's role hasn't changed in this offense, guys. Like, LaVisca Chenault coming in is not going to change his role. DJ Chark, you could talk about him all you want. It doesn't change the slot role that he's going to play. And if you look at Jay Gruden, what he did with Pierre Garçon, what he did with Jamison Crowder in Washington, a lot of the offense does go through the slot wide receivers, the tight ends. That's why we're talking about them. There's a whole lot of targets to go around this offense because we've talked about the offense. The defense is terrible. They lost so many players on that team. They're legit a contender for the top pick overall in 2021. So a guy that got 101 targets last year in 15 games, he missed a game and still saw 100 targets, is going undrafted?
Back-to-back years, by the way. In fact, he had more receptions last year than Kenny Galladay, Stephon Diggs, Calvin Ridley. I mean, Tyreek Hill, he was getting fed the ball, man.
He has 101 targets in back-to-back years.
Yeah, I was just about to say, 101 targets, guy, and then 101 targets in 2018 and 101 targets in 2019, 66 receptions in 2018, 66 receptions in 2019. Isn't that ridiculous?
It is, and I think that there's more. I hate that Dede Westbrook has been like relegated to this slot-only role because Dede Westbrook
has wheels,
and they can use him downfield, but Jacksonville is just dumb. I'm hoping that Jay Gruden is a little more creative with him and like will move him to the perimeter because Westbrook over the last 2 years has played more slot snaps than I think any other wide receiver.
He's good, man. I like Dede Westbrook, the football player. They're going to pass the ball a lot this year. I think that's a really good call. Yates, let's go back to you for your next one, and then I'll talk.
Yeah. I'll go with Antonio Gibson was the guy that I was going to bring up.
Yeah, good, because I was really hoping we'd talk about him since you stole him from me, too.
Yeah, I mean, Antonio Gibson, rookie running back / wide receiver out of Memphis, and you look at Antonio Gibson's college tape, you're looking at a guy who is the definition of explosive. He is a fantastic receiving option. I think that as you look at his role in Washington now, we could potentially be talking about him getting some carries on the ground, factoring in alongside Darius Geis and Adrian Peterson. So that kind of limits both of Peterson's and Geis's ceiling. But then I think he could be a candidate to be the slot wide receiver. And so he's going to be moved all around the formation. He's going to be a guy who is, you just get the ball in his hands and let him create after the catch. Limited touches at Memphis, so we don't have a large sample size to work with because he was playing behind guys like Darrell Henderson and Tony Pollard, you know, previously at Memphis. So last season, I think only 77 touches off the top of my head. So very, very small sample size. But what he did with those, I mean, he turned almost every play into a huge, huge gain. So he's someone who, if you get the ball in his hand in Washington, he can definitely create. And I mean, the best part is that ECR running back 56, ADP running back 58. Guys, I'm at running back 34.
Oh,
so he has 77 touches total at college.
Yeah,
that's it. That's
amazing, man. In fact, What do you think about that, Tags? Because Tony Pollard was the same way, right?
I'm going to disagree with you guys in this one again. Like, I know you guys are both on Gibson. I know the industry.
Why did they draft him in the third round?
Why? Because they're the Redskins. They drafted Bryce Love at the top of the fourth round the other
year. They're the Redskins for like a couple more days.
That's right. That's right. But we should probably announce that. Washington, we're going to say this. Washington, the Washington, we don't know. They're actually changing the name. If you guys have not heard, if you've been out of the loop, they're changing the name. It's a little bit sensitive. It's a touchy subject, but it's something that they are going to change the name. So we will have a new name for Washington very soon. But my issue, guys, is that it is Washington. Okay. We do have Adrian Peterson still signed there. Darius Geis is still there. They signed Peyton Barber in free agency. They signed JD McKissick. They signed him. They have Steven Sims who played down the stretch. They have Terry McLaurin, obviously going to be the leading target getter on that team. This team is so bad. And the worst part about Washington is that they don't have a bad defense. The defense is actually really good. Like, they have a lot of first round talent on the defense. And now with Ron Rivera there, the defense is going to be better. So talking about someone like Gibson, who's a bit player, he's a worse version of Anthony McFarland. Why is Anthony McFarland being overlooked? Is like, I hear everyone talking about Gibson as a sleeper, and I understand wanting to do it because, again, he is an explosive player. If you get the ball in his hands, I don't necessarily believe that the offense is going to have enough explosive plays, but give me a good reason why we should talk about Gibson over someone like Anthony McFarland, who's just as explosive and plays in a 10 times better offense that's actually going to score football points.
Because he actually has a chance to start. Because Geis does not look very good.
If they were going to start him, Geis would have been cut. Adrian Peterson would not have been re-signed. Like, there's so much bad on this roster. There's like 7 running backs, dude.
Well, you have to look at this new coaching staff coming in. And so these guys like Steven Sims went undrafted. And yes, he played well. Yes, he's exciting. But he is a more of like a punt returner, kick returner than I think an established slot wide receiver, where you're looking at him and you're saying he's got that slot receiver role, you know, like in the same breath of what we're talking about Terry McLaurin. Steven Sims does not have this slot receiver role locked down.
It could
like
be
that.
Trey Quinn for all
it
we know.
It could be Trey Quinn. It could be Antonio Gibson. Then you're looking at, okay, well then, so a third round pick. That indicates that they are going to use Antonio Gibson, that they loved him. They identified him as a key piece to a rebuilding roster.
So what about Bryce Love then?
Bryce Love
Bryce Love's going to be cut, man.
Hold on. He was the top of the fourth round, and it's the same team.
He is going to be absolutely cut.
I don't know.
Yeah. He's going to be cut along with like 5 of those running backs that don't mean anything that you named. Every team carries 8 running backs at first, and then...
Yeah, they'll whittle down.
I was looking at mockdraftable.com because you can see like the athletic comparisons to players. One of Antonio Gibson's biggest comps is Delanie Walker.
What?
Because he's this big, so strong dude who can jump out of the gym, and he's super fast.
Antonio Gibson is 230 pounds, and he ran a 4.3 something at the combine. Like, this dude
and
is...
he's super strong. He's stupid strong.
I didn't even realize Gibson was that big. That's
he's
ridiculous.
Huge, man. He's a monster.
Yeah, it's still Washington, though.
It is. Yeah, it is. But that's why someone like Antonio Gibson could find his way into significant touches, because it's Washington.
Right. And when you're talking about a guy, it is a completely different conversation when you're talking about a slot receiver who does not. OK, Jason Witten. I'm just throwing out Jason Witten because he has literally no yards after the catch. You know, like that kind of player where, OK, yes, he's going to see 82 targets on the season like Jason Witten did last year, but he's not going to do anything with them. But when you're talking about if Antonio Gibson is looking at significant targets and then he has the talent and explosiveness to create after the catch where they're just going to get the ball in his hands and he can do something with it, he's going to drastically outperform his ADP. And that's in the conversation of what we're talking about with deep sleepers.
And their head coach referred to Antonio Gibson as the second coming of Christian McCaffrey. Oh, so we have to keep in mind that they really love Antonio Gibson.
That's a bit much.
It's way ridiculous. But the point is, the coaching staff really likes Antonio Gibson. Moving on, I'm just going to show you guys how it's done. Okay, we're going to go lightning round here. Here's my final 3 players. I've got Irv Smith Jr., tight end for the Minnesota Vikings. First round talent, Kyle Rudolph's getting old. They lost Stephon Diggs. He plays out wide sometimes. Extraordinarily talented. There's a chance that he blows up and becomes the number 2 receiving weapon in that offense. Corey Davis, Tags, I know you like Corey Davis a little bit this year too. Look, I don't love Corey Davis. I love Corey Davis at his ADP because he's a former top five pick. He's going to be starting last year. We've already said this time and time again about Corey Davis. Last year, their coach said he's by far the most talented wide receiver on their team. He dealt with injuries last year. And then Breshad Perriman, somebody who's being drafted outside the top 180 picks who has a chance to be the number one wide receiver on his team. I get it. Jamison Crowder's there. I get it. They drafted Denzel Mims. Breshad Perriman didn't just put up stats at the end of last year. He looked really dang good last year. And that was with Mike Evans on the field. Finally, he got his chance and he looked great. They signed him for a lot of money. I think he's going to be starting. I think he could be the number one wide receiver for Sam Darnold. And let's not pretend the Jets aren't going to be playing from behind again. All right. Anyone want to pick apart any of those before we move on to Yates' final players?
I picked on you guys enough. We're good.
All right. And you like Corey Davis. Is that right, Tim?
I like Corey Davis, the player. I hate the situation sucks, but it's more like Tannehill. You're buying into the fact that he's going to throw a little bit more this year. And if A.J. Brown regresses or if A.J. Brown were to miss any time, you have a starting wide receiver. He's a starting wide receiver. So it's like saying you have the top 64 starting wide receivers in the NFL, you know, in two wide receiver sets. Davis is one of those guys. So, and he is super talented. So knowing that he gets a full offseason, well, not a full offseason with Ryan Tannehill, an offseason with him, it should help production for sure.
I want to talk about Irv Smith really, 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 really quick. This is the way my brain works. I was eating lunch the other day and I was like, is Irv Smith going to be the starting option on the outside when Justin Jefferson moves into the slot? This is just what I think about
exactly
during
what I thought.
No, it'd be Tajay Sharp, I think.
No way.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
We don't know that though. You know,
Irv Smith wears a wide receiver number, by the way, guys.
I'm saying that this is a possibility where I think that if Irv Smith is going to be simply the second tight end behind Kyle Rudolph, I know Tags that I think you're projecting him to be the number one as far as targets, but Kyle Rudolph is still there. If that is his only role, he's not going to be relevant for fantasy football because it's just not going to be enough volume. But if he is going to be that guy who plays on the outside while Justin Jefferson moves into the slot, then we're talking about a potential steal. So that's one thing I did want to mention.
All right, Yates, you've got a couple more players. Why don't you tell us who they are?
Yeah, I'm going to throw out Russell Gage. I know that Bobby, you know, crapped on him earlier.
I did that on purpose because I saw him on your list and I had to bring him up.
I did that on purpose.
I'm just going to mention him because he is someone who contributed in a big way last season when Calvin Ridley went down. He's going to be someone who is a reliable. He's going to see 4 to 5 targets per game in this passing offense. And so for him to be currently outside the top 100 wide receivers, I think is a little ridiculous. I'm getting him super, super late everywhere because he can be a reliable option to plug in on bye weeks, but lacks the elite upside like Bobby was mentioning. And then Tyrod Taylor is the other guy yes. that we'll bring up because, guys, ADP of quarterback 31 right now. I agree that Taylor's nothing more than a game manager at the NFL level, but he's never finished with less than 84 carries in a season where he was deemed the starter. And additionally, in those three seasons in Buffalo, Taylor never finished as less than the quarterback 16 for fantasy football.
He was top 10 once.
Yep. When we're talking about a truncated offseason where Justin Herbert is someone who needed to sit regardless, now we're talking about an offseason where he hasn't been able to develop chemistry with his wide receivers. I don't think Justin Herbert's going to be starting at all this year, guys. I think Tyrod Taylor is going to be the guy, and he possesses the rushing ability to be super valuable for fantasy football, and he has an amazing schedule to start the season. So if you're waiting on quarterback, you know, in your drafts and you're going to draft super late, Tyrod should be a guy that you're looking at.
And if he does start, it's not going to be until after the bye. Bye week, week 10. And their first 9-week schedule is the easiest in the NFL and not even close.
It all depends on their win-loss record. That's what it comes down to. If they're winning football games, they're not benching him because that defense is really, really, really good. Probably the best cornerback unit in the league right now, but really good. And that's what I'm saying. Like, if Tyrod Taylor can manage games, not turn the ball over, which is something that I really thought the Jags should have done going back a couple of years, and saying I wanted the Jags to sign Tyrod Taylor because I think he's a fine game manager. So yeah, if they're winning football games, he's not getting benched.
Well, they're not going to lose against Cincinnati, Carolina, the Jets, the Dolphins, the Jags.
I am all in on the Bengals. Like I'm adopting them as my second
absolutely.
Team.
But you're talking about week one against that defense. I don't think they're winning.
Yeah, I don't think so either. But I'm hoping.
All right, Tags, give us your final names, buddy.
All right, I have Alan Lazard for obvious reasons. He's kind of cheating because he's 181 in ADP, so it's like right on the borderline. But still, Alan Lazard is a guy that earned Aaron Rodgers' trust, and having an offseason to work with him would help. John Ross, I've mentioned this before. I do not think that T. Higgins takes over as the starting wide receiver. Right now, I think he's A.J. Green's replacement. So John Ross, if he's starting with Tyler Boyd and A.J. Green out there, like John Ross can take the top off the defense, and Burrow can nail him deep.
Those wide receivers are so good, man.
Yeah, John Ross is like... He's still a good football player. And then last, I don't even know why I say him the same for last. I don't even want to say it. It's a Jets player, which is, well, whatever. But Chris Herndon, A guy that flashed as a rookie with Sam Darnold. Darnold does love the targets over the middle of the field, whether it be Jamison Crowder or Herndon or Ryan Griffin. Herndon obviously didn't play at all last year, so we didn't get to see him in Gase's offense.
Herndon came back for like one series, didn't he? It was like super, and then right back out.
The part I worry about with him, though, is that he plays for Gase, and Gase is a type of coach who holds grudges, and he apparently was upset with Herndon and his physical condition when he came back. So that's my worry there, but yeah. I mean, when there's you're talking upside, about tight ends, you're talking about guys that you're going to be streaming, and I think Herndon will have some streaming appeal.
I think that's a good way to put it, man. I like those names. Anything else that you want to add, Yates?
No, I think that's it.
Well, cool, guys. That's all for today's show. I'm so happy to be back. Like, look,
it's good to have you back.
I like vacation, but I missed you guys. I missed football, and we're about to kick it into gear, baby. We're going to have so many episodes coming up. Hit that subscribe button, and also hit the subscribe button on our YouTube channel at youtube.com/fantasypros. Remember, we're going to be posting a mock draft every single Monday on our YouTube channel. Tons of other content as well. Again, that's youtube.com/fantasypros. And don't forget to check out the signed DeAndre Hopkins helmet at fantasypros.com/contest. We're going to be giving away this bad boy to one lucky listener July 15th. That's coming up. That's this week. So make sure to get your entries in. All you need to do is head on over to Apple Podcast or Stitcher. Send us a screenshot of that review at contest@fantasypros.com. Again, the details are at fantasypros.com/contest. And thanks to the sponsor of today's show, Pristine Auction. You're going to love their website. There's all kinds of great values to be found there on sports memorabilia, signed helmets, signed jerseys, signed footballs, other sports, all kinds of stuff. It's free to sign up and enter the registration code FANTASYPROS, all one word. That's going to get you $5 off your first purchase, and you are going to definitely be able to find something for your cave that you absolutely love. You can check out pristineauction.com. That's P-R-I-S-T-I-N-E auction.com. For Kyle Yates and Mike Tagliere, I'm Bobby Sylvester. Thanks for listening, and enjoy your football. I just wanted you to watch me dissolve.
There are some things that are too good to keep a secret. Like how your Amex Platinum card helps you have the perfect trip. I'd like to check into the Centurion Lounge. Or how it seems like you always get those hard-to-snag tables.
Ooh, yum.
And how you get the most out of select can't-miss events. With access to the Centurion Lounge, Resi Priority Notify, and Amex card member benefits at select events, you'll have to share. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
Ready, set, griddle this grilling season. Get the Weber Slate Rust Resistant Griddle with a carbon steel cooktop that's safe for metal tools. It's pre-seasoned and ready to cook on right out of the box. It's the griddle that stays ready, not rusty. This griddle heats evenly edge to edge. It reaches up to 500 degrees. The Weber Works Prep cook and store system keeps cooking supplies handy, and you can carry all the food, condiments, and utensils you need. Get fired up for your new Weber Slate Rust.
Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel battery tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now you can save $50 on select battery tool sets. Real Steel. Offer valid on select AK system sets through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.